Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This is the invocation. It's on page 1. There you go. Sanskrit. Om Agyanate Mirandasya. Gyananjana Shalakaya. Chakshurun Militam Jaina. Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam. Sthapitam Jena Bhutale. Svayam Rupa Kada Mahyam. Dadati Sva Padantikam. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? Rupa Goswami Ki. Yeah. So we are going to this Bhakti Shastri program, no? And we did, Light of the Bhagavat, one of our books, very nice book. We did it on Saturday night at a program at the Spirit Works. Very nice. Yeah. And that was written in 1961 for a congress in Japan on cultivation of the human spirit. So Prabhupada took a very nice chapter from the Bhagavatam and described very beautiful art. You know, and it became a whole presentation at a symposium like that. So it's very nice for meeting people. Anybody who's interested in cultivation of the human spirit. Right? Okay. And then the next we did Isopanishad, small books outside there. Like that. Yeah. There's so many classical literatures all over the world: Arabic, Greek, Chinese, right? But out of these, Indian literature is like an ocean, unlimited. Over 160,000 known ancient Sanskrit texts, with architecture, medicine, all these things. You know, but all with a higher purpose, right? Yeah, higher purpose. Music should take you to some higher level like that, right? You know, medicine should actually not just be to cure the material diseases, but also for the soul to become developed. Yeah. So Bhagavad Gita is considered like the summary of everything. You know? It's very nice, the basic principles like that. And this is a part of a much larger book called the... No. Mahabharata. How many verses in the Mahabharata? Plus or minus 1,000. Plus or minus 1,000. 1,000 verses? 10,000 verses? 100,000 verses? 1,000,000 verses? Yeah. It's about 100, it's 100,000 verses. Biggest book in the world. And it's a whole, you know, political, social history and, you know, during the Age of Bronze, when Merlin the magician was here. You know, and in the end, all these politics and everything else, this whole history, and so many things about what is right, what is wrong. Actually, we were traveling with our Manipuri group through across the U.S. some time ago. These dancers and artists from a very traditional place in the Himalaya Mountains called Manipur. And very profound art, culture, very classical. So we came to, we went across from California to Kansas to Chicago, and then return New York even, return like that. So we had one night in Salt Lake City like that. At the same time, by nature's arrangement, Charu, president there, had arranged a presentation of the Mahabharata at Brigham Young University in Provo, like that. Big Mormon place. You know. So it was two devotees. It was Mangalananda and Bhakti Peter and Bhakti Margaswami. So three people were doing it like that. And they were all very professional, so it was very professional. You know? And then we were there, so we thought, okay, we thought we'd combine this like that. You know? And so the auditorium was about like maybe twice as big as this, but thrust seating. In the beginning, maybe like one-third full. But the whole thing was so intense, but by the end, every seat was full, and people were sitting in the aisles like that. You know? So it was good by itself, the presentation they were making. But when it came, for example, the martial arts scenes, these Manipuri guys with these big swords and everything else whacking away and sparks flying in the air and jumping and everything else. It was like, wow. It was like as good as any Hollywood thing like that. You know? Oh, good, wow. And then what else? And they had invocation with these drumming. They do all these like flips in the air, like barrel rolls. You go like that, like that. The drumming together and stuff was incredible. So it started off like that. Wow. So, and finally, the whole thing finished off, and it said, then the Yudhisthira went back to the spiritual world, finished. And we added, where every song is a dance, and sound of Krishna's flute is the dearmost friend, and the doors are opened up, the gopis came out, and something like that. Dancing, singing, you know, and everything else finished like that, you know. And these, the Mormons were all coming here because they wanted to see, okay, this is a Hindu thing, and we have to go do our missions, you know, in India and preach to the Hindus and convert them, so we better understand what their culture is, like that. So after what you see, after watching these guys just sitting there watching, like, you know, I think, my God, maybe, you know, maybe they're going to convert me, you know. Because the Mahabharata that deals with all these very, very fine ethical and moral questions. You know, what is right, what is wrong, very detailed. You know. At one point, they were trying to desnude Draupadi, right, the princess, in public, in front of all these big, in front of the royal assembly place like that, you know, trying to take her clothes off. You know, wow, they're horrible. You know? And so then one of the cousins, Dushasana, you know, he was, Bhima's, he's trying to take her clothes off, you know, so Bhima said, I'm going to rip your heart from your chest and drink your blood. Or else I'll never go to heaven. All these things, heavy vow, you know. Shut up. Like that. So all these very complicated, subtle things. So finally, the battle came. In the Peter Brook's movie. I like the movie, Peter Brook's movie. It's really good. Indian one. So Bhima's fighting with Dushasana and has him on the ground. He smashes his chest and rips it open. He's drinking the blood. And he says, and there's nothing sweeter than the blood of my enemy. And he has blood all over his face. You know? So then Draupadi, who was, you know, the princess, she comes there. And it was for her. He did it for her, right? Because she was pushing him like that. So finally he's there. He's going to go to hell. He just killed his own cousin, ripped his heart out, and all this kind of stuff. You know. And he looks up at her like an animal, like says, Draupadi. So again, she could have just said, oh, I never wanted this, and run away. You go to hell. Like that, you know. So it's a big test for a woman, you know, again. So in the movie, I forgot the actress. She was the only Indian actress in the whole thing like that. And she's pretty. Sarabhai? She's Gujarati. But she looks like Gina Lola Brigida. She's like this tall, this black-haired, passionate Italian beauty, you know. Yeah. And so then she kind of looking at the whole thing, and then she just drops on her knees in front of the body, flips her head over, and takes it up and ties her hair up. You know, the blood is on my head. Oh. tough women. You know? But it's for everybody. You go through this, you see all these kind of tests. You know. So finally it comes down to this point, the Bhagavad Gita. This is before the battle starts. And even still, you know, so there's 18 chapters like that. How many chapters? Okay. They get harder. Yeah. And so chapter titles, let's just look at those right here. So I'm not going to overview here like that, something like that. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, if all the people who had read Bhagavad Gita as their like their main scripture in life, their main book, or seriously like that, were assembled here at one time in Boise, how many people would there be? Like that, he couldn't see, like, you know, any direction. A helicopter would be like, I don't know how many would be like that, you know, unlimited, you know. So here we are amongst them. Yeah. Okay, first one is called Observing the Armies on the Battle of Field of Kurukshetra. But also I think it's called Setting the Scene, right? Yeah. Yeah. Let me change this. Originally, observing the armies. Okay. Okay. So, Mr. Srinivas, what's in this first chapter? What do you find here? Can we eliminate this? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I understand. This first chapter, where is it? Okay. It's only this much of the Bhagavad Gita, right? It's very small, you know. Actually, where's the index? This much is the index and everything else like that. It's pretty big, actually. You know? Yeah. But this is the problem, right? Yeah. And this is the solution, right? Yeah. But it's very small, but unless you know the problem, then the solution is not very significant like that. Yeah? It's like you have all these medicines, but you have to know which disease they're for, like that. So first chapter and part of the second chapter, the whole kind of the problem is there, you know? So, Mr. Srihari, what is Arjuna's problem?
He was looking at the whole army. It was an army.
Yeah.
And there were some rules and teachers and things like that. So he had four dilemma in front of him.
Oh, yeah?
With the compassion.
Oh, okay.
Thinking that, and then compassion, and then killing your relatives, so sort of enjoyment. Because if you would be on throne,
Yeah.
The third one was that he's a sinful reaction, like if you consume it,
yeah.
The sinful reaction. The fourth problem was that he was
that's enough. Oh, yeah.
So when they're killed, then the women are left unprotected.
Yeah.
And then they will produce unwanted progeny.
Yeah.
Which will destroy the family.
Destroy the world. Yeah. So there'll be bad reactions from this in the future for everybody. The reaction wasn't good. Yeah. And so what was his solution? Do you know? What was his solution? Yeah. That's the second chapter. First chapter is there too, right? Yeah. No. Is it there? In the first chapter. Yeah. I guess it's in the first chapter, yeah, it's there. What is the solution? No? First chapter. Yeah, O Govinda, I will not fight.
Like
that. That's how he's going to solve the problem, by not fighting. Yeah. But then, so that's the end of the Bhagavad Gita, right? Yeah. Then what happens in chapter 2? Yeah. So basically it's Arjuna. He sees the whole scene, what's happening, the whole thing, and it's full of all. I think tomorrow night we'll get more details. This is starting out as an overview. And he sees a situation like that and he decides it's better not to fight. Yeah. But in the second chapter, then Krishna tries to encourage him, right? To engage in fighting. And he gives different reasons probably. You won't go to heaven. You won't enjoy life, like that. So many things like that. Yeah. And finally, he's confused, right? Because Krishna's doing his job and confusing him. So where is it here? Sisya's Taham. 2:7. Yeah. So finally he surrenders to Krishna. So I can't solve this problem, like that. I can also see that not fighting is also not a good thing. Yeah? So then what happens? What happens in the second chapter? Yeah? Sankhya, analysis. First thing, it was called ontology, right? What is the ultimate nature of things? You're get everything in this right category. So I think the first, to me, the first part, which is about, until about verse 35 or something like that, he's explaining this, you know, what is reality, the different elements like that, that the body is different than the self, body is different than the soul, and also individual souls are different than each other. You know, different people have confusion about this, like that. So why should you lament, you know, for the body being destroyed, right? And he gives so many examples like that, that the body is changing, but we are the same. You know, we change clothes, and nobody laments for the clothes so much, you know. So basically, it's Sankhya. He gives analysis, and by logical, by thinking about it. Okay, then the second half, where does it start? What verse? First half is Sankhya. Second half is Bhudi Yoga. Okay. Huh? It's about 35, I think. Yeah. 39 is where it starts. Yeah. O son of Kunti, either you will be killed in the battlefield and attain heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy earthly kingdoms. Therefore, get up with determination and fight. So he's telling him you should be motivated by sense gratification. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting. Okay, here's something higher. Without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by so doing you will never incur sin. Yeah. So that's basically the idea, is Bodhi Yoga is starting right there. Then I says, okay, now I'm going to explain it to you, right? Then after that, what happens? Anybody know? What does he explain? What is Bodhi Yoga? Does he explain Bodhi Yoga right away? Yeah, first off, he glorifies how great Bodhi Yoga is. You know, and people can know this and that, and but oh, this Bodhi Yoga is really great. And finally, he says what it is. What is it? There it is. What I would say. Karmani eva, number 47. Karmani eva dikaraste. Ma paleshu kadachana, ma karma pala heturabor, ma te sango sva karmani. This is a very famous verse in India. Yeah. One lady said she was in high school as a teacher and they all had their bags. And this verse was embroidered on the bag like that. Yeah. So some people think this is the whole message of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. So what does it say? Here, can I read it? Mr. St. Nicholas.
Oh.
Yeah, English.
You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of actions. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty.
So how can this apply to Arjuna? Well, how does it apply to Arjuna? You have a right to perform your prescribed duty. So what does that mean to Arjuna? You have a right to perform your prescribed duty. Yeah? What is his prescribed duty in this situation? Yeah. Okay, yeah, okay, all right. But you're not entitled to the fruits. What does that mean? Easy. Huh? Yeah, going to heaven, that kind of stuff, you know? Yeah. Never consider yourself the cause or the result of your activities. That's a little more complicated. What does that mean? Yeah, or else we should think there's so many living entities arranging the universe, so many bacteria, so many frogs, so many bees, so many, and to think that we're doing something. And then beyond that, to see higher forces, destiny, like that, happening, things, this big influences coming. Yeah. This one. Because I would say there's no yoga here. There's no, you're not connecting up to anything yet. That's why Prabhupada says it's insufficient. Because you should do your duty. Why? Because it's your duty. Right? Yeah. Then in 330, then, which is called Karma Yoga, it says, Mayi Sarvani Karmani. Right? Do your duty for me. Then, Because this is this because it says that, you know. Yeah, yeah. Because it means it's almost as booty, yeah, like that. Yeah. First, I understand. Yeah. One Buddhist phrase is one should look at the world from 2 inches behind your eyeballs. I think you try it right now. So that's the idea: is always stay in the, analyze everything, never become a servant of the mind, right? Never become a servant of the senses, like that. Always stay on the intellectual platform, like that. So it's Buddha or Buddha or Buddhi. You know, it's all basically Buddha was saying: was just be thoughtful about things. What's the conclusion? You should find out. You should find out. You should take it seriously. In the very last verse, I'll come back. We're not giving up your verse now. Did you see that? In the very last verse, 72, text number 72. Esha Brahmi, stiti partha, nainam prapya vimuyati, stitvasyam antekalepi, brahma nirvanam richati. Okay, so this is where the Buddhists go completely mad. And Prabhupada says, when we enter into the kingdom of God. So Prabhupada's chanting Brahma Nirvana as the kingdom of God. Like that. So Buddhists would just froth it, turn green to hear that. Because Nirvana is their thing. It's strange with Buddha, Buddha Yoga, connected like that. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. So that's what a protagonist is on. I don't know. Anybody else have any comments? Like that? That's to me. It's like it's just, there's no real yoga yet. You know? Okay, dry. Yeah. So that's my impression at this point. In my study notes I have here, that I'm going to obviously rewrite these many times. But reading through the whole thing, it's not until the third chapter. In the second chapter, somewhere he says mat para, right? Which means in terms of me. But it's still not exactly like clear like that. But in the third chapter, I mean, one lecture Prabhupada says in the second chapter, Krishna has not given a clear enough explanation of things like that. In the third chapter, he starts to make it clear how you can, you know, all living beings subsist on food grains. Food grains come from rain. Rain comes from sacrifice. Sacrifice comes from prescribed duties in the Varnashram system. And that is described in the Vedas. So if you're a mother or a policeman or whatever it is, you should do your duty, right? Mayi sarvani karmani, yeah, and do it for me, like that. Yeah. So I think the first time that I see like a real, you know, sense of yoga, like that, connection. Otherwise, it's just be Buddhi. Be intelligent. Be thoughtful about things. And as Arjuna says, third chapter starts. What's the first verse in the third chapter? Why, okay, Shiva, why do you want me to engage in this ghastly war if you think that intelligence is better than engagement? Right? Yeah? Than fruitive work. So he's confused. Because one side, Krishna says, don't be a gross fool. Don't get involved in things. Don't be so passionate. Now go kill them. Yeah? So it's very difficult. You know, those who know do not speak. Those who speak do not know. Yeah? One who can see action and inaction. That's what it is. It's very difficult. He tells him it's difficult to understand this principle like that. Yeah? Yeah. Karma. So third chapter. Yeah, it's called Karma Yoga. I don't know how many times, somebody calculated it, I forgot, how many times the word karma appears in this chapter. Karma, karma, karmina, karmina. It's like, it's a great word for the bhaktis. It's interesting. You get these very natural ways to learn the, you know. Okay, let's go. I mean, all the verses here, how many times the word karma appears, and Professor G will tell us what the thing is. Jasi che karmanas te. What does karmanas mean?
Karmanas?
Yep. Karmanaha.
Oh, karmanaha. Alkarma or karma?
than fruitive activities.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Tat kim karmani gore karmani. Okay. And we've got more Buddhi, you see in the second verse there. Third verse. No, I don't see. Oh yeah, karma yogina yoginam. Okay. And fourth, na karmanam anarambam. Yeah. Okay. Of karma. Here it says of prescribed duties. Na karmanam anarambam. Karmanam. Okay, like that. So this is why your chapter is called Karma Yoga. Yeah? Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, what else I have? We have our study guide here. Chapter 3, Karma Yoga. 43 texts, 20 minutes to read. We're doing this overview as 6 chapters in 2 weeks. That's a robust schedule. Yeah. But I think we have the pace. We look at it like 3 days of class each week. Chapter 2 was fat. Now how big is chapter 3? I think from here on things are a little leaner. In Buddhi Yoga, you must have noticed the word Buddhi many times in Sanskrit. In the word is the word karma, here in Sanskrit many times, yes. Right in text 3, 2 topics to introduce. Sankhya by jnana and yoga by karma. We saw these in the 2 parts of chapter 1. No? Now more details. 1. Karma yoga is superior to Sankhya, the first thing he explains. Right? So Sankhya was in the first part, basically. And then the second part we started talking about activity, like that. Yeah? And by Sankhya, you become a wise man. You get jnana. By analyzing things and looking at them, you get wisdom, knowledge. But better than that is to link up with Krishna by karma, activity. So it's comparing those two things. Yeah. Okay? 1. Karma yoga is superior to Sankhya. So Krishna says they're both great, they're both nice, yeah. But better of the two is actually to engage in some practical activity. Because automatically you'll realize, you know, what the elements are, if you're actually working with them like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, this is not Sankhya Yoga.
Oh, it's just
Sankhya. Sankhya. Yeah.
So Buddhi Yoga is yoga.
I guess so, but my analysis is not. It's Buddhi. Yeah. Because in the Buddhi section, yoga, he's talking about karma. You have a right to engage in your prescribed duty. But as far as I see, it's the only definition he gives, really. Everything else is just kind of like comparing it to like other things and how it's superior to the fruity words of the Vedas, and other people get involved in everything, but even a wise man, you know, is carried away by these things. He's contrasting it to all the inferior things. You know, he only gives very little knowledge, which is that you have a right to perform your prescribed duty. Nobody can stop you, right? But you're not entitled to the fruits of the activity. Right? Don't think you're the cause of these activities. Never be attached to not working. Like that. Right? So it's very kind of a gross philosophical point of view. Yeah. Not very practical. Yes, sir. Okay, so two weeks from now we can investigate your thesis. This is what happened in the overview, is everybody is, and you want to go in deeper like that, you know. But we're going to go through the whole thing now. And I think that's one of the things is that we're going to discover that Bhagavad Gita is very confusing. Right? There's many different terms like that and things like that, and that's what Krishna tells Arjuna. He's trying to give him like a clear impression of something which is quite difficult. Yeah? Okay. Karma yoga means to satisfy Vishnu and the demigods for material necessities and liberation. The self-realized are free from karma, duties, but they still set an example for others. Right? Yeah. Who's an example of somebody who acted according to karma yoga, just to dharma, just to instruct others in here, in Bhagavad Gita? Janak Maharaj, okay. Yeah. The ignorant. Yeah. The self-realized are free from karma, but they set an example. The ignorant think that they are in control. Yeah. The ignorant think they control the universe by their work. Karma. He's always contrasting. You see that again and again, again and again. There's the one side, the other side. One side, the other side, like that. So always a continuous contrast. Yeah? Yeah. So the ignorant think they are in control of the universe by their karma, their activities. Yeah? So Krishna contrasts the karmis and the karma yogis. Right? Karmis engage in fruitive activities for their own satisfaction. The karma yogis engage their activities to become purified of sinful reactions, to connect up with Krishna, and finally to actually please Krishna. You know? At different levels of the same thing. Ultimately, everything is karma yoga. Even the purest bhakti yoga is karma yoga, right? Yeah. But different levels of knowledge, different levels of intensity. Yeah, ultimately. It's all yoga. Yeah. You know, pure devotional service means engaging the senses in the service of Krishna. That's karma. But it's how much knowledge you have about what's going on and how much intensity you have like that. How it becomes different levels like that. Arjuna asks, Vachu Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam. Krishna answers. Achovegam, manasakodavegam, promote these things. But he again seems to finish off being equivocal for Buddhi Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Will Arjuna ask about this in chapter 4? Yeah. So it goes back again, almost the same thing. He just doesn't really, he says, yeah, but anyway, you should try and develop knowledge and this kind of stuff. Let's look at the very end here. The very end of chapter 3. Where it is, huh? Evam Bhude, number 43. Evam Bhudehe, Param Bhudva, Samstab Yatmanam Atmana, Jahi Satrum Mahabaho, Kama Rupa, Durastadam. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty Arjuna, one should study the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence. Thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So he's not recommending activity. He's recommending coming to the middle platform and subduing the senses. Right? Yeah? So again, it seems he's going back. Arjuna's going to be confused again. Chapter 4. Is Arjuna confused? What does he say? What's the first verse? Chapter 4. You got it there? What's it say? Huh? Garnet. What do you say? She's an actress, we know that. Yeah. Chapter. Yeah, you got it there. What does it say? English. Yeah. Vaku. Yeah. So, in chapter 3, he says, do it for me. Right? Mayi sarvani karmani. So here he begins to talk about who he is. Everyone says, do it for me. You know, Barack Obama says, do it for me. Everyone says, do it for me. You know? So here he's trying to describe who he is. I think it's the first time where before in chapter 3, he could be like Janak. He could be one of these self-realized souls. You know? But here he's talking about where does he really declare he is different than everybody else? Right in the first part of this thing, he gives some kind of like, you know, what makes him different than everybody else? And Krishna. Chapter 4. Krishna. Yeah. Yeah. 4 or 5. And I like six. I like six. Ajo pisan avyayat mam. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So here he's really distinguishing, right? He's different than everybody else. Even the self-realized souls who are not attached to karma and the body, like Janak and others, he's different, you know, like that. So what else is in chapter 4? Yeah? Yeah? Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Somebody understands my coming and going.
Yeah.
Then he never comes back to the story.
Yeah. So he's talking about the purposes of it, how he incarnates, what his purposes are. So really, really this chapter is a lot about Krishna for the first time, right? This chapter is where really he talks about himself. Yeah. Anybody else have any comments? Chapter 4? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So many kinds of sacrifice are mentioned. Of course, there's a question, we're discussing sacrifice in the third chapter too, right? All living entities exist on grains, like that, by sacrifice. So sacrifice is karma yoga, isn't it? It's a lot of it, actually. You know, karma yoga is being identified as actually sacrifice for Vishnu. Yeah? We think of fire sacrifices and those kind of things, but he's giving a lot of varieties of sacrifice here. What are some of the kinds of sacrifice he mentions? Yeah. Huh? Yeah. But he mentions several kinds of sacrifice. Yeah. Still others who are inclined to the process of breathing, breath restraint, remain in trance, practice by offering the movements of the outgoing breath into the incoming breath. So they sacrifice their breathing process. Right? Yeah? What else can you sacrifice? Oh, yeah. The lady's there. What else can you sacrifice? You can sacrifice your breathing. You can sacrifice your possessions. You can sacrifice your hearing. Everybody wants to hear all kinds of things, you know, in Spanish, telenovelas, soap operas, like that. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, and finally, you sacrifice your mind. My God. Yeah? And what does he say? All these sacrifices. Okay. Number 32. Text 32. 32. Evam bahu vidā yagna vitata brahmano mukhe. All these different kinds of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated. Yeah? O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than this mere sacrifice of material possessions. So now we're kind of talking about karma yoga and jnana yoga. It's the same thing. You're doing something, but now with intelligence. You understand what you're doing. Yeah. After all, O Sanapritta, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So if you're doing things properly, you begin to understand what's going on like that. You put two and two together and see, oh, okay, now I understand. And finally, Tadvidi Panipatena Padiprashnena Sevaya. Wow. It's interesting here. It says here, wow, it's amazing, this book here. Not a very good printing, I guess. It says one cannot get knowledge by books, by studying books of knowledge only. Yeah. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one make progress in spiritual life. Now this seems like to be counter to the process that some people say, well, you don't have to be initiated in ISKCON. If you just read Prabhupada's books, that's enough. Right? I mean, it says here, nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. This is not in previous editions of Bhagavad Gita. As far as I know, we're seeing Akurunath, lawyer, somebody else, the devotees, myself, and we're just discussing this, you know, and how it was added in like that, not in previous editions. And then McConnell came in, and he started talking about this whole thing about Guru Tapa, and he specifically cited this sentence that you have to take initiation like that. And we were both looking at each other, wow. Yeah. So I don't know. They're changing Prabhupada's book. Yeah, okay, they're changing Prabhupada's book. What do you say to that? Huh? Ah, from where? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I myself am trying to investigate this. So I got the original Krishna book dictation tapes. Prabhupada's dictating the Krishna book. So he says, members of the Krishna consciousness movement can take rocks from Govardhan and worship them at home like the deity. Now the Krishna book, this is what the tape says. Now the Krishna book says, great devotees, not members of the Krishna Consciousness Society, great devotees take rocks from Govardhan like that. You know? So if we go back to the original tapes, we're going to change that to say, ISKCON devotees can do it.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I asked Nityagora Sundar, yes, Satsrupa Maharaj, yeah. After the tapes were, after he probably dictated it, Satsrupa Maharaj typed it. Then the manuscripts went back to Prabhupada, and he hand-edited some of those things. Now, for example, there's a section where Prabhupada talks about Mirabai in the Krishna book tapes. Now, I think there's almost no chance whatsoever devotees would have edited that out like that. But Prabhupada, when he saw it, probably was thinking, confuse people like that and stuff. She's a nice devotee, but, you know, it was like, some things aren't quite so straight. I don't want people thinking, well, Prabhupada's just Mirabai, you know, like that. So one consideration. But also, I would say that the fundamental points, Prabhupada made them over and over and over. Sometimes you can feel like, wow, I've heard this so many times, you know. So if you read the purport, you stop and say, well, how many of the things in this purport have I heard before? It's like almost everything, you know. But it's some new things, different perspective. Now, again, our knowledge is like that. It's spiral. It's not like this German thing, you know. One time, forward. Yeah? So it's one, again and again like that. Okay. So yeah, and independently, without guru, understanding shastra is not possible. Even the Bible says it. Okay. So what else is in chapter 4? Anything else? Yeah. No, different people approach God for different ways. Some people, you know, they see God as fire or something, or they see their boss as God, they see money as God, they see sense gratification as God. So Krishna reciprocates if you want to see me that way. In a higher level than the karmis and the yogis, they see maybe mystical powers and these kind of things. And so different people approach Krishna in different ways. He reciprocates however you approach him like that. Of course, he's also a person with free will, and he's trying to be kind. Like that. Even if you don't approach him for the best thing, he'll try and give it to you. Like that. But other than that, he's reciprocating with us. Yeah. So as we get more knowledge about him, which comes from sincerity, from surrender, then we understand how to approach him for the right thing. But I'm going ahead. Okay. Chapter 4. Anything else in chapter 4? This is going to be a very frustrating, superficial thing. Yeah. So, chapter 4. Read my notes here. Yeah. Text 40. Yeah, so contrasting people who don't take to this knowledge, who don't do sacrifice. All the rest, from 36 onward, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. All the rest, to the end of the chapter, is just glorifying the knowledge and the glorious results of those who follow it. Like that. This chapter is called Transcendental Knowledge. Okay. So we have to go from from activity, karma, sacrifice will take us to jnana. Like that. And what is that knowledge? Text 34 says you'll get this knowledge from a spiritual master. And text 35 says what that knowledge is. What is that knowledge? Same as Isha Upanishad. All living beings are in me, they are mine, and like that, and so on like that. These Upanishads, same thing, right? That's the highest knowledge, is to see that everybody is connected to Krishna. Pidayananda Maharaj said one time he went on Sankirtan, Christmas marathon, and they were going door to door, knocking on doors. And he said the beginning was praying to Krishna, okay, I want to be able to see you and the super soul and everybody like that. And so he said, he'd go like that, he'd knock on the door, and just wait to see who'd be behind the door like that, And he has some feeling like how Krishna was with everybody and in control of the situation like that. He said at nighttime he'd dream of apartment houses with just no limit. It's like, every door would be a different person like that, So that's kind of like the result of all this sacrifice and everything else, is to finally see, everybody is part and parcel of Krishna. God is good, everybody's good. We're going from Lima, Peru, on up to Chiclayo in the north, across the desert on the beach. And people were throwing rocks at us. It was a strike like that, Miners were striking, So they started to throw rocks at the buses, and the old ladies in the bus are throwing potatoes at them. So we went a people's bus, The big buses wouldn't go out because it was too, they didn't want to risk their buses being hurt. So we got on Eric the Red, the name of the bus. Eric the Red, and they're going up there. And the guy was driving off the road and everything, Okay, it's Wild West, So we had a movie, of course, and the movie was The Beast. And it was about two tanks in Afghanistan that attacked this Afghani village. And then one tank got destroyed, and the other guys killed all the people there, and really horrible things. And the tank was trying to get back to the Russian lines, and these Afghani guys and the women and everything else are going after it and stuff. And it's all these things, And there was one, the tank commander was this really horrible guy, a brutal Russian guy, was killing everybody on and on. And there was another guy, intellectual guy in there, a Russian guy, and he was asking a Muslim who was actually converted to a Russian about Islam and everything else like that. And he said, what is Islam? He explained how nice it was. If you say, marshuk parafush, something like that, I surrender. He said, even if you've killed my brother, I have to accept it and give you shelter like that. He said, wow, So finally, the tank commander kills the Russian, the Muslim guy, because he thinks he might betray the tank, and blows him to pieces, And then the intellectual guy, drops him off with a hand grenade under him. And all the Muslim guys catch up on foot and motorcycles. They're going to kill him, and he says, Maruf Barfush. I said, what did he say? He said, Maruf Barfush. Ladies want to kill him anyway. But they say, no, he said it. He said the magic word, So he becomes one of them, and he starts helping them, And they share food together. And then finally it comes out that the reason this horrible tank guy, he was a little child in, I think it was Stalingrad. And his parents were killed, everything was killed. He was a little child. It was just like hell beyond imagination. Can you imagine if your children were killed and stuff like that, parents? And the Russian party grabbed him and took care of him. So his thing was, anybody who's opposed to the Russian party is bad. And as you can see, finally, even he had his reason like that, why he was the way he was, And finally, they blow the, they stop this tank. They don't blow it up, and all these people. And finally, it's stopped, and the guys are getting out and going to run. And then what happened? Then the Muslims who are following them finally say, "Okay, enough killing. Just get out of here." So they're running off. And then after a couple of minutes, the women come back with bloody knives. They didn't let them go like that, because they ran over their husbands. One guy was fall on the ground, the tank commander just ran right over the guy like that, And he pulled his wife pulled his leg out like that, so on. So the Muslim guy then slaps the woman, Muslim woman, Muslim husband and wife relationship, Muslim, slaps her, But you can see too that they were women, right? This guy just killed my husband. So it's just like to hell with all the philosophy and everything else like that. So and they wanted to be slapped, or they wanted to be punished for what they did, there's something wrong with that. And everything was okay. So in the end, you see that everybody, in the end, you saw that, it was a good movie like that. Everybody had a reason why they were the way they were. And ultimately, if you had a proper perspective, you could see that everybody is okay. Everybody is situated properly. And it's just how to react to everybody. Okay. Right. Thank you. Chapter 5. What is chapter 5? Anybody got any comments on chapter 5? Yeah, what's it called? It's called Karma Yoga Action and First. Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Chapter 5 starts seems to start with exactly the same question as chapter 3. Yeah? Seems that Arjuna is showing us that an ordinary person would have a hard time understanding these two things, sannyasa and yoga. Again and again, these two points are brought up. This is a very very basic philosophical book. What does sannyas mean? What is sannyas? Yeah? All right. Analysis. You know, isolate the system, step back, like that. And the other one is yoga. Engage in activity like that in the system. Right? Of course. Yeah. Even after the other chapters, 5 seems to be just repeating and amplifying the previous knowledge. We are going in a spiral. Right? Yeah. So, okay? That's what I have. Chapter 5 seems to be, I mentioned another big Bhagavad Gita scholars, and they say, yeah, chapter 5 is kind of like a repetition. Okay. Chapter 5. Chapter 6. What is chapter 6? Yeah, Dhyana Yoga, meditation. 21 minutes. Krishna continues on the same topic. No. The synthesis of yoga and Sankhya. Note, it's not a contrast, it's a synthesis. He's not contrasting yoga and sannyas. He's talking about, yeah, how they are related like that. You know. So how are they related? How are they interrelated? Yoga and sannyas.
Sannyas and detachment.
Yeah. So you can't. You said you can't engage in yoga unless you detach yourself from the material world. Like that. Yeah. So it's a synthesis. They're related like that. We're not talking about blind karma. Because, you know, just blind rituals and whatever it is like that, scripture, far in the scripture, it's also condemned. There has to be a knowledge like that. Right? So Krishna's chapter is giving is doing the synthesis like that. Yeah. Then he goes into talking about yoga. Okay. Text 2 hits it precisely. By yoga, one realizes the same knowledge as by sannyas, or renunciation. But unless your yoga includes actual renunciation, then it's not really yoga. Yeah? Yeah? By sannyas, renouncing involvements in things, one can engage in sankhya. One can engage in sankhya, developing analytical knowledge of the cosmos. This is jnana. Seems that jnana yoga is a little different than jnana, because a jnana yogi does his analysis of things to link with Krishna. Right? That's the difference. Just being an intelligent person. Now he's intelligent so he can engage properly in Krishna's service. Right? But the jnani doesn't have that such a clear goal for his analysis. He may even be engaged in the analysis to become God. Right? You see that? I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not this, I'm not that. What am I? I'm God. Yeah? There's a difference between a jnani and a jnana yogi. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my understanding is, because they're...
Yeah.
There's karma, there's jnana, and there's dhyana, meditation. And there's karma yoga, jnana yoga, and jnana yoga. It's actually confusing. Yeah. Yeah. Karma means activities for producing new bodies. Yeah. Activities to produce results. But when you're doing that for Krishna, cooking for Krishna, making clothes for Krishna, making a nice house for Krishna, you know, understanding for Krishna. Yeah. Well, not understanding for Krishna. Understanding for Krishna becomes jnana yoga. Yeah. Doing for Krishna is karma yoga. Yeah. Yeah. Now again, does it have to be Krishna to be yoga? Huh? Yeah, for the supreme. Yeah. Again, you know how clear the idea is, the final conclusion. Is depending where you are on the ladder like that. Yeah. Karma yoga, you know, by jnana yoga you should have an analytical idea of the conclusion pretty much. Like that. Yeah. 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 Walt Whitman, great American philosopher, he said, life is a road, like that. a spiral going higher and higher. I meet the same men, the same women, same situations again and again, but each time higher, higher. Life is a road. Where does it go? I don't know. But it goes someplace good. You know? So he's a jnani. He knows there's someplace good. We're trying to get there. Right? Yeah? Like that. So that's why this is such an incredible text, because Krishna's really talking. He's talking about one area, one section like that, a very ABC level like that. So sometimes we're confused because it is so simple. You know? We've already got the conclusion figured out because of Christianity or something like that, and Prabhupada. But he's just really it's an Upanishad. Yeah? It's aimed towards very kind of intellectually analyzing things, looking at them like that. Those who know do not speak. Those who speak do not know. Okay. Teacher is speaking. Therefore, teacher does not know. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Where are we here? Monkey and Piggy stole the books. Okay. Light of the Bhagavad. We're going back and forth. The Yoga Ladder. Okay. Unit conclusion. Chapter 7. Okay, one third of the way through. We're going to accelerate here. What is chapter 7 about? What is the title of chapter 7? Knowledge in the Absolute. Yeah. Remember what Krishna said at the end of chapter 6? What did he say? In the end of chapter 6? Yeah. Okay, in Gujarati. In Hindi, in Spanish. So in chapter 7, Krishna starts off, text 1, remember what Krishna said at the end of chapter 6? Yeah, we guess Krishna didn't have text numbers or chapter breaks when he spoke Bhagavad Gita. His flags weren't coming up like that. Yeah. So we see that in chapter 7, he just continues the same idea from chapter 6, engage in yoga. He is still continuing with his coordination of yoga and jnana, which so far is the whole theme of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna has been wondering, how can I know you just by doing yoga? And here, Krishna, he says, he will explain how. How by doing yoga you will know me. Text 2. Here, Krishna seems to drop the yoga thing and just tells Arjuna that he doesn't have to do yoga. He just has to listen. And he will give him, like before, this Sankhya knowledge, jnana, of all the elements of reality and their relationships, like cosmology again, but in detail. I shall now declare unto you. Text 3. He glorifies the knowledge before he gives it. Okay. Then he starts talking about the material world and who he is and all this kind of stuff. Okay. He analyzes it. But more detail. The Bahiranga Shakti, the Tatastha Shakti, the source of these Shaktis. Monkey. What about the Antaranga Shakti? Anapri Shakswami. We'll get to that. Okay. Like that. Yeah. So chapter 7, he's like, it's again, it's Sankhya, it's analysis, now it's detail. There's five elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. There's a superior to those as the individual soul, you know, but I'm greater than all these things. So it's a more detailed analysis of the same thing like that. First chapter, he just said, I'm different than you, you're different than me, we're different than the bodies, fight. You know? But now he's going into, what are the bodies? The bodies are composed of eight energies, eight elements, like that. Boomer, up, and over body. Yeah. Yeah, Arjuna says that. I'll just tell you how it is, like that. Yeah. If you do all this meditation for years, this is what you're gonna find out, you know. These are all my separated energies. Okay. Yeah. Hare Krishna, 8 through 11, I think Krishna's starting to give some pantheistic examples. This is the first time he does this. But again and again and again, he'll give these. I'm the taste of water. I'm the light of the sun. I'm the fragrance of the earth. Like that. And these are very practical things for us to meditate on. You have to appreciate. Ordinary person can meditate on these. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Any comments? Yeah. I have more detailed notes here, but this is like, you know, it's like several weeks. Yeah. Chapter 70 goes through so many things, huh? Four kinds of people who surrender to Krishna, four kinds of people who don't surrender to Krishna, like that. So I probably somewhere surrender comes in here, like that, you know, to Krishna, like that. And accepting this knowledge and trying to get this knowledge, this actual endeavor like that. And those people who do and those people who don't. Because there's a personal moral kind of like choice about acquiring this knowledge, not acquiring this knowledge. Yeah? Like that. And people who don't know yoga are evil. Like that. Actually, the Pope says if you know yoga, you're evil. Yoga is a sin right now in the church. But that's like atheistic yoga. But basically, yeah, as Krishna is saying, there's a, you know, you have to surrender, right? Like that. And you have to develop these qualities like that. Otherwise, you know, so many bad things happen. You know? So, four kinds of people surrender, four kinds of people never surrender. And he starts kind of giving more details of the different kinds of people who actually surrender like that. You know? Same thing, more detail. Chapter 8. What is chapter 8? Huh? Attaining the Supreme. 28 texts. We really like Borijan's summary of this chapter from his book, Surrender Unto Me. Yet he seems to say there are five questions. There are seven. No? Like that. So the end of chapter 7, what does Krishna say? Usually you find, yeah, he says here, yeah. Saadi bhuta adi daivam mam saadi yagna chaye vidu para prayana kale chapi mam. Tevidu yukti chetasa. Those in full consciousness and the consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of God, at even the time of death. So chapter 8, Krishna answers these questions like that. Yeah. So we turn to chapter 8. Arjuna says, what is Brahman? What is the self? What are fruitive activities? What is the material manifestation? What are the demigods? Who is the Lord of sacrifice? How does he live in the body? How can one of those engaged in devotional service know you even at the time of death? Like that. Yeah. So kind of like he's summarizing all the previous points. Arjuna is asking these things again. Like that. Yeah.
Just one thing, a question on chapter 7. There's this one conversation in which Prabhupada is quoting this verse, Yoginam, and then trying to convince that there's an Indian gentleman, trying to convince him that Bhakti Yoga is higher.
Yeah.
And then the man quotes back this verse, Yani Padamo Devatam. But after the four times that people surrender to me, Krishna says to them, the Yani is the best.
Mm-hmm.
And Prabhupada, he dismisses that. So that is different. Can you explain a little bit more how that's different? I mean, if you put the two verses side by side, say, Krishna says, of all yogis, the devotee is the supreme.
Yeah.
And then he says, of all people who surrender to the jnani is the best, then does it apparently compete, or how do you understand that?
No, because to engage in yoga, you have to surrender, you know? So after jnana comes yoga, karma, jnana, yoga, like that. Yeah. So the karma comes to this conclusion. I have to know Krishna at every moment like that. Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I go to church. You know. Yes. I come to your temple regularly. Every Janmashtami, I am there. Right. Okay. But somebody else says, well, maybe I should come maybe every week. You know, and get, because it has a good effect on my character, my consciousness. Let me come every week. You know. But finally, jhana means, yeah, constant metta, constant knowledge, knowing Krishna constantly. Jhana means to make a box, series of boxes, this, that, if, and have Krishna kind of like, you know, it means like algebra, arithmetic, grammar. You know what's going on. You can analyze things and stuff. You know, but then jhana means to come to the point of actually just every moment, you know, watching, like that, you know, being aware of Krishna. You know, so these people, other people, they approach God, yeta mam parabhajante, some because they're unhappy, some because they need money, some because they want some kind of sense gratification, mental gratification by investigating, reading comparative religion. Then finally somebody who knows Krishna, he comes to him because he knows, I should know Krishna, right? And as he begins to know him, then he comes to the point, next point, which is, you know, I should know him. This jnana is this intense jnana. Actually, and sometimes it put it's the same thing. You know, is there's karma, jnana, and bhakti. And then jnana is just a part of, you know, of jnana. Yeah, there's two kinds of jnanis, and here he's talking about the guy who actually bahunam jamanam amte jnanavam mam prapajante, person who's actually got this feeling. Otherwise, you can't keep the you know, the jnana unless there's real, like, you know. Yeah, that kind of person. That's Puri John brings out more like that. We're not talking about ordinary jnani. This is, again, the person after many lifetimes, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, like that. Yeah. And so then, at that point, you know, then amongst the yogis, you know, because again, you can be engaged in yoga, but again, there can still be a lot of contamination with, like, desires to, you know, to develop, become God. You know, again, to develop mystical powers and this kind of stuff like that. So, because you're not sure, you know, you're still like, so you can start to become deviated. You know, so out of all these yogis, the bhakti yogi is the best, who's worshiping me of faith and devotion like that. Okay. No. They come for a certain reason. So chapter 8, 9. You're 9 now? Yeah. Burijan Prabhu's summary is really cool. He says that chapter 8 was kind of a side comment by Krishna on the knowledge that Krishna was giving in chapter 7. In chapter 9, he continues to this knowledge about himself. That seems to match Prabhupada's comments that Arjuna should really not have asked the questions that started chapter 8. Of course, his doubts were for our benefit. Text 1 purport is great. Srila Prabhupada goes on with exactly these ideas. Yeah. In the purport, Prabhupada makes us ask ourselves if we are sincere devotees or not. I answer, well, a little. Mostly I'm looking for comfort. Yeah. So we try to be honest, admit our self-motives. Then Krishna maybe can help us. Yeah, because we really have to surrender. It's actually coming to the whole point there. Without surrendering, dedicating yourself to acquiring this knowledge, you're not going to get it. Yeah. To know Krishna, you have to really be determined to know him like that. Yeah. Yeah. Because this hearing Bhagavad Gita can be extremely potent, and thus we can be powerfully empowered to do our service. 5. Okay. Chapter, paragraph 2? So, in developing knowledge and contrasting people who get it and don't get it. You know. Chapter 10. Okay, now I know chapter 10. Yeah. And chapter 9, how does chapter 9 finish? I have a suspicion there's a flow. Yeah? Huh? Okay. Yeah. In chapter 10, he gives him. So chapter 10 is most... I don't know. You got me? I don't know what I'm doing. I said right in the very beginning of this, and I'm also a student of Bhagavad Gita here. Yeah. And actually Bhagavad Gita is not my thing, not my book. Yeah, Burijan's book, you know? Yeah. No, everybody... That's different, you know. If I go through and read through my notes now and stuff like that and take the time, Again, this was like maybe it was like, I don't know, it was like 6 weeks, you know, to go through this. Kind of quickly of an overview. I think a lot of it is just this, our realization after tonight's class is we don't know Bhagavad Gita that well. Yeah? But some things like chapter 10 I know. Chapter 9? What was in chapter 9? The middle six chapters. Yeah, the middle six chapters. Okay, let's see if I have any notes here. Oh, okay. Yeah. I have next semester. We'll read it in detail here and there. Again, text number 3. Again, contrast. 1 and 3 are basically epistemology. How can we know these things? 4 through 10, the most confidential knowledge. There we go. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is more confidential, and Chaitanya Charitamrita is even more confidential. But relative to general religion, this is deep. It is a chinta beta beta tattva. No? Yeah? All living beings are in me, I am in them. Texts 4 and 10 are the same. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah, I remember that, yeah. 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 So it seems like what he's talking about is how he's present in everything, but he's aloof from it. He maintains his personality at the same time, too. You're never separated from him. Every moment he's touching us, he's right now. He's here, right now. He's in the room, right now. Krishna. Like that. And whatever happens. You know. And someone dies or somebody else like that, some horrible thing happens, and you think, oh, no, he's well. We have the experience that, no, God is here. You know, he's not. Through his energies and everything else, like somebody is driving the automobile, you know, you have to be attentive at every moment like that, right? Yeah. Text 11 through 12, contrast, epistemology, but the demons can't understand this, right? Big purport. Text 13, contrast, the devotees can understand it. 13 through 14, the qualities of those devotees who understand it. Text 16, but I am not impersonal. The demons think that I have become impersonal. Yeah. I am not the universe. The ecologists think that. Some ecologists think that God is the universe. Yeah. 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 Text 21 to 34, the end of the chapter. We see Krishna really makes this point that you will get different kinds of knowledge of him depending on what kind of attitude you take toward him. This is not some kind of impersonal mechanical knowledge. He goes into fantastic details about how the right attitude will compensate for bad birth, caste, or slips or fall downs. He finishes with a clear essential statement that we must worship him. But without Lord Chaitanya's mercy, without Chaitanya Charitamrita, there doesn't seem to be enough specific knowledge in Bhagavad Gita for us to really know Krishna in great detail. Right? We really need the mercy of the Maha Mantra and the holy names as an object of constant meditation to be able to know Krishna constantly and engage in our little part of the Kurukshetra fight for his cause. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Yeah, I wrote this in Russia. Everything I have seems kind of like martially spirited, you know, this part. All the kirtans, you know, kirtans in Russia, you get this feeling of like the Russian tanks going across the steps like that with these bands playing, you know, like rolling like that. You know, kirtans. You know, it's a very martially spirited thing. Bears. Chapter 10. He starts off talking about, he's talking about something in the beginning. Yeah, he gives a general idea of who he is. He's the source of all the demigods, all the forefathers, the rishis, like that. But then he goes very quickly into the four nutshell verses. Yeah, I'm the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything comes from me, the wise who know this. I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Then after that, the rest of the chapter is, Arjuna asks, give me ways I can actually meditate on you, practical ways. So here these are practical. Prabhupada says we can do this. So what is Krishna? I am God. You're God. We're all God. So what is your, what do you mean by God? Give me some practical examples I can think about.
Taste of water.
Taste of water. Oh, okay, yeah. That's not in this chapter. That's in the previous chapter. Yeah, okay. Yeah. 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 Probably gives two examples especially, a taste of water and the light of the sun. He said, everybody can appreciate these two things, how nice they are. But also in among bodies of water, I am the ocean. Okay. See, if you meditate on these things, you actually should do this. If pantheistic things like that, you meditate a little bit and you begin to appreciate. You know, I just sat by the ocean one time, you get so many realizations about how great it is. And then you think, I am God, you are God. Oh, like, have you seen the ocean lately? You know? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 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 Big. If I was somebody by the side of the ocean in San Francisco next to the bay, and I thought, well, what if all the water just went away? Right? Imagine all the water just went away. You know? Yeah. What would you see? Maybe all of a sudden the whole bay would be there, and maybe there'd be a Russian submarine just kind of, oops, like that, there, like that. You know? And you go through the Golden Gate Bridge, and what happens? You walk off, and there's valleys, and there's maybe sunken ships, you know? And then what happens? You keep on going. No, that's a long way ahead. You come to the continental shelf. You know what that is? About 3 miles out from almost all the continents, there's like a cliff that goes down, I don't know, maybe half a mile or something. So you're walking out there, and you come to like this, you know, cliff and on beyond like that, you know. And finally, if you head towards, where's the place? Philippines? You come to the Mindanao Trench. How deep is that? It's like 7 miles deep. So if you get in your automobile and start going down at 65 miles an hour, you know, how long does it take you to get to the bottom? Yeah, about seven minutes, mile a minute, yeah. So if you're driving at 60 miles an hour down, straight down, it'll take you 7 minutes to get to the bottom of this thing. That's deep, right? That's deep, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you're God, I am God. Well, I haven't realized it recently like that. My God powers have been apparently covered like that. You know? Like that. So he asked him, give me some meditation. So then chapter 10, finished. I know this part. You know, other people may know other parts. You know. But then chapter 10, how does he finish it off then? Yeah. Ekang kshena stito jagat. With just a fraction of my, this one angsa, right? I pervade and maintain everything. Right? Well, let's speak of all these details. Everything. Everywhere. You know, pervading and maintaining it. Then in chapter 11, what happens? Huh? Yeah, what's the question? Yeah? See, I know these. Yeah.
Can you explain me all these things, let me see?
Yeah, you explained all these details, and you said that you pervade and maintain everything, so let me see that. Yeah? He says, okay, you can't see it with your present eyes. Therefore, I give you the divine eyes. Put these glasses on. And then what's then? What does he see? Crushed. Yeah. And then he asks a question. Arjuna asks a question. Yeah, who are you? What is your mission? Kalaushmi. Yeah. Time I am, destroyer of the world. So we have to come to this realization that everything in the material world is going to be destroyed. Everything. And if we get that, we won't have full determination to give it up and turn to God. We'll still be thinking, I can do it here somehow or other. You know? Yeah, yeah. So then chapter 10, 11, finishes off there. Oh, okay, very interesting. Then after he shows the universal form, then what happens? Huh? Yeah. Shows him his four-handed form first. Again, shows him his forearm form. Very pleasant. And then? No. After the Virat Rupa, he goes back to the forearm form. Then he shows two-arm form. And I don't think it even says two-arm. It says Somyavapu. Yeah, and I'll show a very beautiful form of even the gods in heaven. So it's there. Krishna's two-arm form is there, but it's just hinted at in Bhagavad Gita. Okay. In chapter 12, he says, okay, I conclusively want to know what is better, yoga or sannyas, like that, you know? He says, okay, you know, well, you know, they're both good, but... But really, You know, the best thing is to be a yogi like that. You know, and yogi means to connect up to me. He's made it pretty clear now who he is. And yeah, you get the same result, you know, kind of if you engage in the sannyas, but it's troublesome to begin with, it's troublesome in the beginning, it's troublesome in the end. Like that. So be a devotee, yeah. Oh my God, wow.
And where Krishna comes here, it's like difficult to follow this in personal path and the body. And the translation was pretty much the same, but just subtle change in tone made it sound like if you're a weakling, you can engage in devotional service, but those who are actually strong take the difficult process of impersonal. So here's the easier process for you.
Yeah.
You know, and then the commentary explained how Arjuna was a worldly man, and each word was translated almost the same.
Yeah.
It's just a few prepositions and postpositions and some tone difference, and it gave a completely different feel to the translation.
Wow. Etam mam prapajante tapsadai vabhajami aham. So chapter 12, and he also gives a very nice yoga ladder. He says, the highest thing is just to love me with all your heart. If you can't do that, then engage in sadhana bhakti, vaidhi bhakti, follow rules and regulations. If you can't do that, sure, develop, you know, wisdom. If you can't do that, do good things. He goes all the way down and goes back up again. And it's kind of confusing. Bori John says it's confusing. He says the acharyas are also. It's a little bit how Krishna's kind of cross-referencing thing there. And finally, he finishes off with the qualities of a yogi, of a devotee, like what his qualities are, like his personal character qualities and stuff like that, and why he's dear to him. Chapter 13 is what? Huh? Yeah? Okay. Yeah. Now, what is that? Sankhya. Yeah, same thing, analysis. There's the field, the knower of the field, and the knower of the knower of the field. We know matter, yeah, but God knows both us and matter. Bishop Berkeley, Berkeley's named after him, same point exactly. Yeah. And he goes into details like that. He goes into analysis of the field now. Now he goes into more. Before he has like there's the body. Okay, that's chapter 1, chapter 2. In chapter 7, he talks about 8 elements. In chapter 13, he talks about how many elements? Like 24 or something like that. Yeah, so same thing. Yeah. And that's chapter 13, Kshetra Kshetra Gnya. Yeah. So what is knowable? He says, I'm going to explain to you the knowable. The process of knowledge, you know, begins with humility, accepting a spiritual master, being austere, clean. He gives a whole process which science, you know, doesn't talk about a lot of these things. The very first thing he says is to know anything, you've got to be humble. So science doesn't talk about that. It's almost like you have to be arrogant, you know, to be a scientist. You know. So, but then what is knowledge? He talks about what is knowable. So what is knowable in there? Huh? We can, yeah, but is the field knowable? Can you know the field? Yeah, the super soul, Paramatma, because everything else is like smoke. Everything else is just changing. You can't actually know, you know, the clouds, because they're always just changing like that. So finally, what is knowable is the super soul behind that. And the puppet is just like, you know, cloth, but behind that is the super soul. So ultimately, the knowable is the super soul. And it's very profound. Chapter 14. What is chapter 14? You know? Yeah, three modes of material nature. And this is, again, how the super soul is manipulating things, making things change like that, in different ways like that. So it's all Sankhya. Sankhya and Sankhya means analysis, and the other one is dynamic. What's making all the elements move, which brings us very close to the super soul, like that. So very nice analysis in the different modes of nature. In the mode of ignorance, if one dies, he takes, what is it called? Mudha janma, right? Ass birth, you know, animal. So very nice analysis. And then this will go on from the whole rest of the Bhagavad Gita. From this point on, I guess it starts off analyzing in terms of the three modes. But it'll go on later on in terms of food, in terms of knowledge, sacrifice, what else? Huh? Charity, austerity, you know, like that. He'll analyze everything in terms of things like that. Knowledge. So chapter 14, chapter 15, probably, yeah, huh? Yeah. Yeah. So what's it start off with? Purushottam? Doesn't start off with Purusha. Starts off with? Yeah. What kind of tree? A banana tree? Banyan tree. And a banyan tree is like a, we have them here in this, right around us, very similar. Fig tree. Yeah. Yeah. Banyan fruits are like little fig fruits, right? And every one of those seeds is another banyan tree. They're so tiny. Yeah. 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 So he talks about the banyan tree. Why, what are some of the examples of the banyan tree? What is it, what does it represent? It's an analogy. Fundamentally, what's the most fundamental thing the banyan tree is representing? Yeah. Yeah. Got to find the root. But these are unusual roots. These roots go up. Well, why is that? Yeah. Huh? Yeah, because this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. The nicest thing in the spiritual world becomes the most degraded thing in the material world. And actually having a complete detachment from selfishness, envy, all these kind of things leads you to the closest you can come to the spiritual world, like that. Yeah. The leaves are? Hymns? Yeah. So many things like that is a nice analogy to try to stand against Sankhya. And then how do you find the root?
You cut it with knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you cut it with detachment. And you are armed with knowledge or something like that. Armed with knowledge and detachment. Again, which again is jnana and Sankhya. 15. So that's it? Chapter 15? Chapter 16? Ah. Oh, okay. Yeah. There's a section after that. And chapter 16? Huh? Yeah, Prabhupada says demons revealed, like that. Yeah, so he's really contrasting the kind of people that surrender, the kind of people that don't surrender. Yeah, actually, if you read this, the thing is when you read this, is it sounds like you know something that's like totally modern. Yeah, 9/11. What is 9/11? Oh, there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine, other is called demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me the demoniac. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness, this is 16:7, neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth are found in them. They say that this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced from sex desire, and has no cause other than lust. Following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves, who have no intelligence, engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Taking short of insatiable lust and absorbing the conceit of pride and false prestige, the demoniac thus illusioned are always sworn to unclean work, attracted by the impermanent. They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by hundreds of thousands of desires, absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. It's like, wow, it was incredible. You know? And a lot of work, too, right? To maintain this kind of consciousness, it seems you've just got to be determined. You know? Because you're not happy. I mean, you're trying to stuff more and more gratification. I mean, I don't hear it. Boise a little bit, right? But if you're going to enjoy, you go to San Francisco, right? Probably say about personally even more than Los Angeles. Los Angeles is kind of spread out, but San Francisco is concentrated. Okay, we're going to enjoy Mr. Demon. So how do we go to San Francisco? How do we get there?
Fly or fly?
Oh, don't drive, fly. But what do we fly? What kind of airplane? SWA, Southwest Airlines, Peanuts. No, you have your own Learjet, right? Learjet company has no interiors. Every single interior is custom designed like that. So you go in, it's waiting for you, flies off like that. You land in San Francisco, you have a limo waiting, right? And where do you go to stay? Huh? The Hilton. Well, maybe so. No. It may be the Mark Hopkins or the Fairmont. Yeah, the Fairmont's on top of Knob Hill, like that. Yeah, one side's the Fairmont, the other side's the Mark Hopkins. Maybe like $800 a night, you know, like that. For like, you know, it's kind of like an ordinary room. There's a glass elevator out this outside of the thing, going to the top, like that. You know, and so many clubs and, you know, shows and movies and, you know, Fisherman's Wharf, like that. That's the Fairmont. Yeah. Fisherman's Wharf. I had one guy who was saying, yeah, he says, if you're going to go for the weekend with San Francisco, just two people, you need at least $1,000. At least $1,000. I mean, to really like, you know, to enjoy it like that. Yeah. And so, you know, there's, you know, so many kinds of, you know, entertainment, everything else like that. And so, you know, the demons, you know, have breakfast in Paris, have lunch in New York, and have a dinner watching the sunset go down at Mark Hopkins. And some people are living like this. When I was over there, I was like, because you can walk into the lobbies and stuff like that. I was doing something. I was sitting in the lobby of Mark Hopkins like that. And this guy came down, his wife, and he is all white, totally white, you know. And he had like a wallet like this big in his hand, like no pockets or anything else like that. And she was, we were Italian, and she was also dressed really expensive. Seemed like kind of like some kind of emotional argument, a little bit emotional about things, you know, kind of just some kind of thing like that and stuff, you know. And you can tell, I mean, this guy is so rich, all he has to have is like, you know, one credit card or something like that, you know. There's one lady in San Jose, and what was her name? Her name was Mary something like Mary Kellogg, and she lived in the in San Jose. And tonight it was a kind of upper class area, but not so rich, you know, upper like that upper class, not too much. And she was a single lady. And she had cats. And she had like television, and she had some doll collection. And she was a nice person like that, you know. And when she died, she gave $25 million to one hospital, $37 million to another charity, and $42 million to another charity. And they checked with her banker. Her average bank balance was $5 million. You know, she wrote a check out. You take my check? How much is this? $6 million? Oh, called the bank up. Oh, that'll clear. Yeah. So Mary Kellogg's cornflakes, yeah. And, but she was a very unusual person because she could live without being disturbed. She had a very simple, happy life. Because usually you just can't control yourself like that stuff. You'll find out. Yeah. So this is the demons. Okay. Chapter 17. Yeah, what's the question there? Oh, I know something. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, because in chapter 16 he's finishing off what is the thing which determines whether someone's a demon or not a demon? What is the determining factor? 16 finishes off like that. Huh? Yeah? Whether or not the following scripture. Yeah, Shastrivadim Utsridja. Yeah, that's it. Shastrivadim Utsridja Kamate Kamakaratha. Something like that. Yeah. So that's the thing. So in chapter 17, he says, well, what is the position of those who don't have faith in Scripture exactly? How are they situated? Yeah. So he describes different kinds of faith according to different kinds of modes. People believe in different things like that. It's a question of those who don't, you know, yeah, kind of more about the demons, kind of. Because somebody can be faithful. It's kind of like a thing. I mean, I've directly heard this, you know, somebody... We have these conch shells, Australian whelks, on our altars. Somehow we developed this whole thing of putting Australian whelps on our altars and calling them Lakshmi conches. Yeah? And the Lakshmi conch is quite different. It's kind of like these things with ridges on them. you know, they're in the book of marine mollusks. It's a Lakshmi, it's a whelp, Australian whelp. It's not a Lakshmi conch. And so then it started to come out, and some people were so like fanatical. They said, well, no. And it's like, once you start worshiping something, you can't worship, you can't stop worshiping, right? I said, I've never heard that before in Bhagavad Gita. And I was like, no. We got it on the altar, it's been there, we can't. And they had this, you know, faith. You know, faith like that we developed in Lakshmi, in Australian whelps. You know? So specifically Bhagavad Gita says, you develop a faith in something according to a particular mode like that. You know? But it's not that just having, no, not having faith in something and being faithful to it, I guess that's kind of good. Something, you know, is it? You know? There's a French phrase that no man can sink so low that some dog or some woman won't love him. This is a French guy say. Yeah? Somebody will be devoted to you like that, you know, some dog or some woman. Women are more faithful, you know. But this is kind of the same point, isn't it? Arjuna's asking us, what about somebody who's just like a dog? A dog who's faithful to his master like that, you know? Isn't that all you need? What about a dog who's faithful to his master? What mode is he in? Goodness, passion, or ignorance. One famous story in Ireland. One guy, one street dog, remember this story? The guy was starving and some guy just took him in and fed him for a few days, and the guy died within maybe like about 5 days. And then they buried him in the cemetery, and this dog kept coming. And they tried to chase him out. He couldn't chase him out, and he just stayed in the grave for the next like 5-6 years. And finally he died. And he could not chase him away or anything else. Like that. So finally they built a little house for him. And gave him some food, but that was anyway. It wasn't like he was thinking, "Well, if I do this, these guys will take care of me." It was like he was starving, you know, and stuff. And I guess he was, you know, this guy was kind to me for 5 days, and after that, he was going lying in his bed. God, is that it? That's all you need? What mode was the dog in? I say passion. Yeah, the mode of passion, like that human relation. Yeah. And finally, chapter 18. What is chapter 18? Is it necessary? Is chapter 18 necessary? Yeah. That probably says that Krishna's actually covered everything already, you know, but now it's like a, kind of like a recap, recapitulation of everything. Recap. He's already explained everything, but now he's just going to go over it again like that. Yeah. But then, yeah, it goes through the modes of material nature, faith in different modes, and then finally, it comes to this whole conclusion. And one life member told me, he said, what's your favorite verse in Bhagavad Gita? He says, oh, I like the verse where Krishna says, do whatever you want to do. Huh? He showed us in chapter 18, it says that. Krishna says, right? Now I've explained everything, so do what you want to do. Right? He says, but if you don't follow me, you'll go to hell and be damned, doomed, and lost forever, you know, like that. Yeah? Yeah? So... Chapter 18, now many, you know, very important verses, you know, like that. Yeah. Anything else from chapter 18? What's from chapter 18? From chapter 18, huh? Yeah.
So your work is not perfect.
Yeah.
So you do something, you will
lose. Guaranteed to have some contamination. Yeah. And if we become focused on trying to have fault-free work, then we'll never do anything. Yeah, it's one of Maya's tricks. You know, I'm not going to do anything until it's perfect. No. There will always be contamination.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
This is being... Mode of goodness. I want to be in the mode of goodness, so I get caught up in that mode and I don't do anything. Right? Yeah. And a technician is somebody who never makes the smallest mistake as he proceeds towards the grand illusion. Right? Every step is correct. You know, but he ends up at the wrong place. So in the mode of goodness, we become addicted to being good, you know, relatively speaking. Like that. Yeah. And he also talks about, you know, surrender to me. And he talks about, you know, those who explain this are very dear to me, like that. Yeah. And so in the end, Arjuna says, my doubts are dispelled and I'm ready to fight like that. So Dhritarashtra says, or Sanjaya tells you Dhritarashtra? Yeah, my hair stands on end, seeing this by universal form, seeing all these things. And the final, yeah, wherever there is yoga, Krishna, the master of all yoga, and Arjuna, the great archer, there will be an extraordinary power like that. Jai. Give me the key. Jai. Okay, we did it. Okay. So anyway, I don't know how well Prabhupada knew Bhagavad Gita. If like it was like, you know, he knew every part of it and how it should. I don't think he did. Many times he was asking devotees to like look up verses and stuff like that. You know? So again, we have to get our own practical relationship with these things. You know? There was this South Indian Brahmin. He was a very illiterate Brahmin. Right? He couldn't even read Sanskrit very well. He was trying to read it, but everybody was criticizing him, laughing at him. But he was like crying. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, why are you crying? And why was he crying? He said, sort of picture, And so he said, you know Bhagavad Gita, like that. So that's the whole conclusion. Yeah. Sarva Dharma and Parijaya. Actually, bring me the verse before that, Mamana Bhavama Bhakto. And just develop a surrender to Krishna. Prabhupada says 1866. I suppose 1866. Prabhupada says, just forget it. Don't worry about this, that, this, that. This. Just do it. Do it. But no, do it. Okay, if you can't do it, all right. Yeah. But just surrender to Krishna, everything else will automatically happen like that. Okay, so Prabhupada ki jai. Tomorrow night, we'll meet again across the street, right? In the Gopi Shram. Like that. And maybe we'll have outside, you can have a drive-in theater tomorrow night. You can drive in your car and have an outside movie, right? Outside movie. My suggestion is to try and show it outside, the PowerPoint show outside. I don't know, it'll be dark enough or not.
Yeah.
Walk off the street. Wow. Shrimp to me.